Patrick Somerville has a new book out, This Bright River. It's called A Novel. I like they put that on there, because in case you're wondering what you bought here. It could be a cookbook. You never know. No, it's a novel. This Bright River. He's with us, as a matter of fact. Join us right here in our studio. Patrick Somerville, author of The Cradle, with This Bright River, A Novel. You don't need those unless you need them.
No.
You can have them if you want.
That was a little
headphones.
Little Leonard Cohen right there.
Okay.
That was nice.
What?
Yeah. I liked it. Thank you.
What?
We're communicating with each other.
Oh, you are. Well, don't do it in my expense,
you weren't getting
please.
Yeah.
A novel. Did you know it was a novel?
Yeah, I did. And once I saw the cover, I knew.
Yeah. Do they do this with all novels, put a novel on there?
They do it often,
I think. Was there some doubt about This Bright River being a novel?
There was no doubt that it was a novel. As far as I knew when I was handing it in. Yeah. Maybe they wondered after they got it, and then they had to reassure themselves.
So are we talking the Fox? You know, you're from Green Bay, right? So
I am.
Which river are we talking about?
It's made up. It's called the Bright River. It's in the UP in the book, in the story.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But I mean, we're trying to figure out, now these guys are actually from a place called, what's it called?
St. Helens, Wisconsin.
St. Helens.
Another made-up town. Yeah.
And you gave sort of, you said where it was, so I got a map.
Oh, no.
And we're trying to narrow it down here.
No one's ever put this much pressure on my
It's very
my
important
city.
Here. So we're looking, it's near Kettle Moraine.
Yeah.
And near Milwaukee, and
yeah.
It's 30 miles from there, and we go towards Watertown.
Uh-huh.
It's not Oconomowoc, I'm pretty sure. It's not Delafield, because that's too close to Milwaukee.
Right.
But there is a Helenville.
It's around there.
Did you know that? St. Helens, Helenville?
It may have had something to do with
Helenville?
The naming. Well,
I see a reaction to Helenville. Have you been to Helenville? Did you grow up near
no,
there?
No, I haven't been there. Never seen it. Never, I've seen it on a map, though. But, so it's also a little joke. And my mother is from England, and she grew up she was born in a town called St. Helens, too. And so anyway. I wanted to make up a town for the story, and it's also in my other book, The Cradle, but I wanted to kind of make it an imagined town just so I could move the Dunkin' Donuts around or whatever.
Yeah.
No Dunkin' Donuts in Wisconsin, but, you know.
Because I actually did a study of Helenville, and none of the places you mentioned in the book in St. Helens are there.
That's right.
Remotely. There's just a post office, and there's a Stop and Shop kind of thing.
Well, you verified what I could have told you here.
Now, the New York Times, you got a great review from Janet Maslin. Well, not a great review, but you got a review, and that's the important thing,
yeah.
Right? It's more important to have a review than to have even a, you know, necessarily a good one.
Yeah, it was fine. It was a little bit strange, though, too, in that some of the information contained in the review didn't seem quite accurate relative to
totally
the book.
Inaccurate.
Yeah. Totally inaccurate, yeah.
Because the book begins with this scene, which is kind of strange, in Madison. Madison's a big player in this book, so mm-hmm. That's kind of cool. I like that. And you mentioned Wisconsin Public Radio, which is...
I did.
You know,
yeah.
They're very grateful for that. Any mention whatsoever. And that's why you're on, as a matter of fact. Totally payback.
I knew that back then.
Yeah.
That's why I put that in there.
But a guy gets... beaten up pretty bad after being at the bar with this guy, and the guy comes out and hits him on the head, and we don't know what happens to him.
Yeah.
And Nick's.
They're at
Nick's,
yeah. Yeah.
With the steam tables, Nick's, that
yeah.
one?
Yeah.
Wow.
You guys know Nick's? People go there?
Yeah. All these local places are in the book, it's kind of, so you think, well, maybe this is actually happening then, you know? And then, but the reviewer got the wrong guy who was hit on the head.
Yeah, that's where the confusion started, which is a problem because it's the beginning of the book.
Yeah. So does that invalidate a bad review then?
Well, in my mind, I guess, but it doesn't, you know, in the end it's fine just because it's good, like you said, it's good to get the review. But it's a little bit hard to take a lot of the conclusions seriously with that. Yeah.
But
that
she reviewed the first one, she loved it.
Yeah, she gave a great review to The Cradle, my first novel.
Yeah. Yeah, and she actually sort of liked this one too.
Kind of, yeah. Seemed like she was holding back, like she was trying to be nice.
Yeah, but she said the guy might have been hit on the head. That's why this book, I think she was referring to you, actually.
Yeah, seemingly in the subtext, yeah.
The author might have been hit on the head and tended to ramble. But
which I do.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is 400 pages.
Yeah, it's a little long. It's a little much.
You know, I said it to David Foster Wallace, and I'll say it to you. No book has to be that long. You know?
What did
and
he
then
say?
I said,
what did he say to that?
He was pretty funny about it. And I said, what's with all the footnotes? I said, do you throw anything away? He said, technically they're endnotes because they're at the end.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. There's a reason for things being the length they are.
Yeah, and The Cradle is a pretty short novel, yeah. My first novel, and I wanted to just tell a story that was a little bit slower, a little bit longer, and get to know the people a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so it's 400 pages.
Whose phone is that?
It's probably my dad's.
Why do you have a phone that sounds like a phone? That is so weird. Imagine having a phone that sounds, your ringtone sounds like a phone. Very upsetting notion. It's good, though. I like it, though. And this guy, Ben, is an interesting character.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah. Does he have something in common with you? Maybe a little bit.
So his story is the story of a guy who grows up in Wisconsin, right. Goes away to the West Coast throughout most of his 20s, and does not really do very well at life for that 10 years. And yeah. He comes back in his early 30s and kind of gets his life in order, living back in the town where he grew up. And so I share some qualities with him. I did not move to Portland and become a heroin addict like he did, but...
Who has the time?
Yeah, really. But at the same time, I think his sort of, like a lot of people who are just sort of trying to find their way, especially in their early 20s, I think I wandered a bit like he did, too. Yeah.
And there's a lot of Wisconsin-ness to him and to the book.
Oh, you think so?
Well, yeah, I think so. People who are in Wisconsin would appreciate the Wisconsin-ness to it. Even the fact that if he leaves the state, everything goes to hell.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
You have to come back to Wisconsin. You only do good in Wisconsin if you're from Wisconsin. You know, yeah. Outside, horrible things can happen. You come back.
Yeah, and then that happens in the UP, too. That he goes to the UP and terrible things happen.
UP? He's got to get back to Wisconsin. I know we have some Upers here, so I don't want to say anything bad about
it. Are there Upers here?
Yeah, we have two Upers right there.
Not that terrible. It's also beautiful up there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's just necessary for the purposes of the book.
Yeah.
And this is sort of like Wisconsin Death Trip meets... Catcher in the Rye or something like that.
That's good. Can I have that blurb?
Yeah, yeah.
In paperback?
It is, because he's sort of a protector of people, of youth, and trying to find out what's going on. But there's also this whole Wisconsin stuff going on. You know, the mass murders, the usual thing.
Yeah,
you know,
typical Wisconsin stuff.
You know, and there's a history of it anyhow. And that sort of plays in. There's a lot of the murder and stuff in this book.
There's a little bit. I'm a sucker for a crime drama always, and so there's a little bit of that in here. And there's a mystery in it too. But I think the violence that's floating around in the book is also kind of about. It's part of the story of both the characters, the lead female character, Lauren too. It's sort of about history, kind of always coming back to find you, no matter how quickly you run or where you go, it'll catch up with you eventually.
Right. Right. And but there's even good murder and bad murder.
You know. No, they're all bad.
Ben says to Lauren, he said, about the guy he just killed, he said, was it as bad as this other murder that his cousin did?
Yeah, right. He's trying to figure out kind of what the distinctions are, those hazy distinctions between kinds of violence.
And she said, no, this was a good murder. So
that's kind of what she said.
Yeah, sorry, more or less. So I thought that was good. There's good murder and bad. It was certainly called for in the case of this guy who was her ex-husband, I guess. One of the things I hate to do is, do you mind if some things are given away in discussing the book?
You've just given away the entire plot.
Yeah,
of the book,
I know. So.
I don't mind at all.
I had a horrible incident with one of America's leading authors.
Former friend.
Well, we were never friends or anything like that. And just because I gave away a thing, and I didn't intend to do it. It was just that the book culminated in something that occurred in Minnesota. And I said, boy, if you only could have, this guy could have been discovered in Wisconsin instead. And then everyone went, oh, no, he said he was.
Who was this? Can we get some names?
Oh, no, I don't even want to go back to that again. I hate mail. Never got hate mail like that from, you know.
He's listening now. Do you want to apologize?
No, it's not a he. So. Yeah, I did. I really was not intentional. But so it's hard to do, discuss a book, and then I guess I ruined it already, though.
You did.
Yeah.
No need to read the book anymore, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Then there's this whole puzzle thing. This Ben is like a puzzle solver and a game, not exactly a gamer.
Yeah, he's sort of, with that character I was thinking of, I feel like everybody knows someone like this or has someone like this in their family. The person you know who's just really, really good at every game that you ever play with them, every board game, every puzzle, every kind of, they just have a mind for that kind of thing. And he's that way too, and in his wanderings, he falls in with a guy and they invent a video game together, and that sort of plays a background role in this story. So he's sort of that guy who's good at every game, but he can't figure out how to live very well.
Yeah. He can figure out puzzles except life puzzles.
Right.
But he does, actually, and he does figure out a major puzzle in this book, which I'm not going to even say, because it's so crucial to the understanding and enjoyment of this book. Involving his cousin Wayne, I might add, who died under mysterious circumstances in the UP. However, I'll say no more. But that's one of the things, the puzzle.
Yeah, and I like that, too, because I think really good stories have that feeling to them as well. I wouldn't call a good mystery a puzzle exactly, but I think you're touching on that same kind of pleasure. Yeah. And so I like a book that has a little bit of work that the audience has to do.
Yeah, the twist on this is Ben was in prison for burning down his friend's house accidentally.
No, that's actually just a real description of the story. We got some laughs over there.
And that's when he wrote these little episodes, these little vignettes or whatever that he sent to his friend, this Jeremy guy, who made it into a video game, made a fortune on it.
Right. And in the end of the book, he's sort of like the guy who made Farmville, or, you know, those annoying little games that come through on Facebook. But there's one puzzle in the middle of the book that you don't have to solve if you don't want it for the story, but you can take some time and solve it.
Which one was that?
This is right in the middle here with the pictures.
The one?
Remember when you got to the middle of the
book
and you
read
this part?
I skipped that. I skipped that because I don't like puzzles. I skipped that.
And you were allowed to. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
Those
are rivers, are they?
You're on the right track already, Michael.
Hence the river, the Bright River. Huh?
And that was good because I got some people to write in with their solutions and explaining how they figured out the puzzle. I didn't actually make it. There was this guy in Chicago who was named The Puzzler. He wrote for the Red Eye, which is a weekly little newspaper, and he made the puzzle for me.
The puzzles are sort of like a red herring or a MacGuffin.
Yeah, yeah.
Hitchcock used to call them MacGuffin. The thing that absolutely nothing to do with what you need to know that's going on. It's just there to mislead you into thinking something's going to be solved.
Yeah. But that one, unlike some of the other ones in the book, like I think it clearly sort of is like you don't have to do this if you want to keep going. I wouldn't do that to you.
It's like intermission from the book here. Here's a puzzle. You can like, but. The book itself was not written, and at one point he says people don't read novels anymore; they play video games or something like that, or they they do puzzles.
I kind of think that.
What?
That people don't read novels anymore; they play video games.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
But I mean, it's unusual, isn't it, somewhat to think of novels and video games both telling stories in the same way? Is that?
Yeah, I think. Well, I think the video games are becoming more and more sophisticated. And I think that they're moving into more complicated stories, and that is going to be a change that we see. And I think at the same time, too, writers are figuring out ways to use iPad or different ways of reading to integrate kind of different pieces of media into novels as well. So I think that they're bending toward one another a little bit, all with that aim of storytelling, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. But I was thinking... When I sort of got to that, I think that this actually is a puzzle or a video game that we should be playing in the reading of, but it really is not.
I don't understand what you just said.
Okay.
But yes.
I mean, it's not that you go through and there are different levels you get through and finally you get to the end of the game or something.
Yeah, it's built a little bit like that. Yeah, okay. But at the same time, I think Ben is finding out, and this is the reason why that kind of like being good at games thing doesn't apply very well to life. That it's in the end, life is just too complicated for that. The rules are always changing and the players are always changing. And so I think the book is sort of about him understanding that you can't use whatever that skill is to navigate your family and your history and your relationships in the same way.
Doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's good. It's very good. And I'm interested in this thing now. When this whole thing came up with Janet Maslin wrote the thing, and she got that wrong, and they had to do a correction because it's the New York Times, right?
Right, and the I made an email address so people could write in to solve that puzzle, and that's the only reason I made the address, and it's the main character's name at gmail.com. Yeah, And so the New York Times didn't write to me, they wrote to him.
I gives you some idea about their fact-checking at the New York Times.
Well, they didn't say Patrick, they said, Ben, dear Ben, are you the one who got hit in the head in the prologue of Patrick Somerville's novel?
And so you answered.
I did answer as though I was Ben.
Yeah.
And then we went back.
What was this guy's name, Ed or something?
Yeah, Ed Marks. Ed, Culture Desk at New York Times.
Culture Desk.
Great guy. Honestly, really,
yeah,
really
sounds
great
like
guy.
A sweet guy, right?
Yeah. Well, we had a long exchange, and you know, it was nice in that he obviously had a kind of a wry sense of humor, and even though it didn't feel great what was going on, I liked that there was this nice human face to the New York Times, yeah, emerging, which usually just seems, you know.
Yeah. Is it true you exchanged 38 emails?
38, yeah.
38 emails with a fact checker who thought the character was a real person.
No. He never thought it was a real person.
No.
He was always joking around.
Oh, he was.
You know,
okay.
It was always a little tongue-in-cheek. He wasn't confused about reality.
That's a little better,
yeah,
than that was. And is there going to be is something coming out, a movie coming out of this, or a video game?
No.
No? Nothing?
No. Not that I know of.
You mean the review killed off every hope you had?
It was a
good thing. I mean, that's got to be, that actually,
I wouldn't have put it like that, Michael.
Yeah.
But I would say,
it's a good thing.
I would say also that the book is sort of, I mean, you know, it's sort of, probably doesn't lend itself well to being a movie either. There's a lot of long scenes, and there's a lot of kind of interior stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, we cut most of that out.
Yeah, that's true.
Otherwise, it'd be like a 4-hour movie then. Get it down to at least 2, I think, to make it, you know, marketable. Then we got to worry about the leads.
Yeah.
We can take care of it.
Let's talk after.
I did like the little piece you wrote about at home. Your wife read the review to you as you buried your head in the couch.
Yeah. Not the greatest feeling at the moment it comes out.
Yeah. Do you usually not read a review, or do you?
I usually read them. I do.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit suspicious when my author friends say they don't.
Yeah, I can't believe they wouldn't.
It's just the internet makes it so easy. That, I mean, I would have believed that someone maybe didn't go down to the library to find the Boston Globe and read the review of themselves 30 or 40 years ago. But the internet is just too easy. I think everyone ends up finding them all.
But it's a good thing. It's a good thing in the end, because it is a New York Times no matter what.
Yeah.
And the book is This Bright River. It is a novel, in case you're wondering. It's on there on the cover. And it
says that on the front, yes.
Yes, very good. And very accomplished novelist, Patrick Somerville. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Nice to have you here. The pride of Green Bay, Patrick Somerville.